This content is brought to you in part by Real Marketing, the only marketing firm recommended exclusively by the Institute. Real Marketing utilizes over 25 years of expertise, and their products are built and customized for you to dominate any neighborhood, anywhere. Go to realmarketingforyou.com. That's realmarketing4you.com. Welcome to A State of Mind, a podcast series all about motivating, inspiring, and educating you in the art of selling luxury real estate. My name is Diane Hartley, and I'm the president of the Institute for Luxury Home Marketing. Today, we're talking to the executive team and founders from Supreme Auctions, Jenny Heal and Maverick Cummins. Supreme Auctions is really the founders of this thing we call luxury real estate auctions. And in our opinion at the Institute, this is really the best auction company because they have a special understanding of the luxury real estate market, and they have the resources necessary to implement the right marketing campaigns to bring down the gavel in a successful auction. Today, we're going to talk about the real background of a luxury real estate auction from the perspective of a real estate professional. And at the end of this, I think you'll see why we think these are, you know, the greatest in the industry, because they weave the real estate professional into the process. So Jenny and Maverick, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Hi.
Nice to see you today.
Very nice to see you, you both. And, you know, you both have really amazing backgrounds. Can we take a minute or two and kind of go through each of your backgrounds in this industry that not a lot of people know much about? So, Jenny?
Yes, for sure. And you're exactly right, Diane. Having come from Europe, I grew up in England, and in Europe, auctions are very first and foremost in people's minds when selling the most prestigious items, whether they be art and antiquities or whether they be a beautiful jewel or any other luxury product. I started very young at an early age attending estate auctions with my father. He loved collecting antique clocks, and we would go to estate auctions. So from a very early age, I was drawn into the auction world. Fast forward through following my marketing education, I was transported all around the world to approximately 60 countries doing advanced marketing for entertainment venues. So combining what I knew about auctions and combining what I bring to the table from the marketing perspective internationally, it was a natural ease into the auction arena when Maverick and myself met and founded the company, finding that there was a niche that was empty there as an opportunity to be able to sell the most prestigious estates and residential homes through an accelerated marketing program of an auction. So that's pretty much from the get-go of where that foundation came from and where our mindsets came together. And we founded the company offering that opportunity to sell through a luxury auction platform because it was a timely format of a sell as opposed to a potentially traditional hurry up and wait game.
Interesting. Maverick.
Yes, I started out in the art world. So I sold art antiquities for many years globally, traveled into over 60 countries around the world. And I sold my company at 40 and then looked at what was next. And I've always owned real estate. We have a bunch of apartment buildings in the Bay Area with my brother. But I didn't really like the traditional model as it put too much power in the hands of the buyer. In the art world, I mostly handled all the sellers and their antiquities. So we looked at the traditional model and saw with the invent of the internet, it was changing dramatically how properties were going to be sold in the future. So it was very unusual for an auction firm, a luxury real estate auction firm, we were the first ones to have this idea to embrace the agent in our program. In the auctioneering industry, it's very uncommon for an agent to work with an auctioneer. Most of those are brokers, real estate brokers, so they are the competition of the realtor. And that didn't make much sense to me either, as much as the traditional model didn't in real estate. It made much more sense to embrace the realtor because, frankly, they have all the product. that we wanted to sell. And we founded the company in 2007, and almost 15 years later, we have been extremely successful. We're very selective, unlike other firms, on the properties that we take on. That's one reason why we have such a high success rate. And I learned that in the art world, we weren't good for every single art piece of artwork and antiquities. We are very selective in that world. And I took the concepts of the high-end art world and applied those to high-end real estate, together with Jenny's marketing background, to create Supreme Auctions.
That's cool. And you know, this term accelerated marketing, right? Anyone around real estate always thinks of it in terms of what you both call the traditional model, right? Where, you know, once you examine it, you realize the power shift occurred with the advent of the MLS no longer belonging just to the real estate professional, mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
So that's what you saw. And so in that shift, and I want to spend some time on that, because I want to demystify this whole process. It's a very fascinating process, and we don't always, you know, when something only occurs in a niche, we don't always really understand it. So this idea of the power shift, Maverick, that you talked about, where in the arts and antiquities world, really the sellers, right, mm-hmm. are in control. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like, dig in on that.
Sure. In the traditional model, the buyer's the person that's in control, especially mm-hmm. in today's marketplace. So having only represented the seller, we wanted to create a model that favored the seller, not favored the buyer. As far as initially, the buyer has an opportunity, and the buyer broker, there's no better way for a buyer broker to make a commission than in our world. Because the thing that this luxury auction accelerated marketing, we call it, does is it creates the urgency for the buyer to act. Because there's two things in the luxury world that rarely exists. One is competitive bidding. In the real estate world, they call it multiple offers that happen if you're below $1 million. But when you get over $2-3 million, it's extremely rare. So we have the buyers compete. That's the first thing. The second thing, and probably the most important thing today, is this has a timeline connected to it. It has an end date, which the traditional model doesn't have. And I tell sellers and real estate agents, don't underestimate that. It's extremely powerful, because these buyers that we deal with, they don't have to sell to buy. They don't have to buy at all. So you have to motivate them to be able to buy now. And in our method, it's a 45-day window.
Kind of drilling down, Jenny, I want you to talk a little bit about more the traditional way, like why are buyers in control in the more traditional marketing?
For myself, being brokered for the last 15 years, what I'm seeing is that the buyers are a little more in control traditionally, because they have all the pieces of the pie, let's so to speak, all the properties that are available in that particular area that they may be searching, or in a given neighborhood that they're looking at. They have the option to make their offers on the properties that they see fit, that they want to do so. Or they can sit and watch those properties potentially linger on the market until they decide to act. That's where I feel that the buyers are more so in control on the higher luxury real estate end of the price points that we work in, because there's not as many, as we all know, buyers that are ready, willing, and able to purchase those homes. And so they watch and they wait, and they're very, very patient. To Maverick's point, in our process, there's a time-driven line by which they have to act. So yeah. No longer do we consider them in so much in control in our process.
So in this way that we all know is traditional, right, and the buyers being in control, there's also technology support that supports that for them today that didn't always exist, right?
Absolutely.
They can set up watch lists.
Correct.
Yeah. So the system also favors that. Right?
It does. There's so much information. To your point, you mentioned a little earlier, Diane, years ago, the MLS was very restricted to those that were licensed. You had your little black book, and there really was a little black book years ago that only those brokerages had access to and knew what properties were for sale. When now through technology, there is so much information available to buyers online. They can see what properties have sold. They can see how many properties are available in a given area. They can see what properties are pending at what price points. So they can see and have a really good knowledge of a full understanding of what's going on in a given area. So they can make a decision and decide what they feel they want to place an offer on onto a home. Because of technology, there's so much information out there that simply years ago they didn't have.
Yeah, and these are savvy people who know what to do with it.
Exactly. Right.
Mm-hmm. So Mav, I want to swing back to you to talk a little bit more about this process where now you're saying, let's put the sellers more in control. What does that look like?
Well, the seller, we agree on a conservative range of value that we work on with our agents. Our agents are an intricate part of the success of our program. So on these initial calls, we go through the system, and then for the agent themselves, we work on a range of value that the property we feel will sell in, collaborating with the listing agent because they are the most knowledgeable people in the area. I've sold a lot of properties all over the country, our firm has, but it's difficult to be able to know what's going on in every single market like you're living there. So in that respect, that's part of our journey with the agent and the seller. The big thing with the sellers is you've got to get the people off of technology and get them to walk into the home. And that's the frustration, one of the frustrations with sellers to their listing agents is nobody's coming. You know, it's been on the market for a year. You know, we saw three people. So they think it's the agent's fault. Many times it's not the agent's fault. And I would say most of the time it's not.
We just absolutely demonstrated that it's the system.
Yes. So you look at the Zillow and the rest of the Trulias, all the rest of them out there, the buyers have the major problem with the traditional market is they, and every agent that I've ever talked to agrees, they have too much information. Mm-hmm. They know what the square footage is, pictures, Matterports, descriptions, no reason to call. So a recent agent said, gosh, we had 3,000 views in the last 8 weeks. I said, out of those 3,000 views, how many times did the phone ring? Zero. So that's the marketing that Jenny and her team put out drives the buyer to pick up the telephone. So how do you do that? It's a simple process, but it's not used very often. And that is you have to leave questions unanswered. That's the key. So if you go onto our website at any given auction, you'll see there's no addresses, there's no open house times, there's no terms of auction. It drags these people out of the shadows, which they love being on, Trulia and Zillow and all the rest of it,
sure,
and forces them to pick up the telephone. And then when that's routed to our project manager, their job, when they're our feet on the ground, they're there for a month, their job is to get the people to the front door of the home. If we can't get to the front door, we fail.
You just mentioned the timeline right there, right? So it's between 30 and 45 days in
Correct.
This process. And so, which again, in the traditional world, that's strange because there's an end date. How does in the case, right? So we're partners with the Institute. We've known you for a long time.
Yes.
And many of our Institute members have reached out to you and had very successful transactions with you. So kind of starting with that moment of meeting, what happens? So I'm a luxury agent. I call you. What happens? What criteria are you looking for? What does that process look like?
Sure. We had a recent agent do that not too long ago from the Institute. Mm-hmm. So she had her own property. She was partners with her father, and she was looking to, they had had the property on the market for a year, very little activity. So she had heard about our firm, and then she researched every single auction firm in our industry. She talked to everybody, and she called the Institute. She called other agents that we work with that was part of the Institute. This was in North Dallas, an area called Frisco. And we had an initial phone call. Obviously, for our criteria, we have to have a motivated seller that wants to sell and that's realistic in their price expectations. That's why we work on a range of value. If they don't want to sell in that range, we'll pass and sell something else. And then once we've gone through the process, then my next step, as I did with Lisa Bloskus, our Institute member, I got on a plane to go and view the property. Either myself or Jenny always previews every property before we take it on. That's kind of the last step. And then our sellers, we sit down with them, we reiterate what we talked about, make sure there's not any questions because we don't want to have any surprises for them through the process. And then we book the date, and then we move forward with an agreement with them. And then the whole process lasts about 45 days. And we show in that, in Lisa's particular case, we had over 300 people come through a property that was in a gated community that saw a handful of people in a year, which kind of sounds fantastical, but it happens on a regular basis for the most part. And then from that point on, about 50% of our properties sell before the auction. So that's not uncommon. Sometimes people don't like to mess with an auction, or they just don't want to take a risk of losing it on auction day. So we had, I believe, 6 different offers on her property prior to the auction. And then we created a bid war prior to the auction, back and forth with the different bidders. And then it ended just on the upper side of the range that we said it would sell in. So happy agent, happy seller. And that's what we're shooting for with every single auction.
So I'm gonna unpack a lot of what you just said, because you said a lot. So we're gonna rewind and talk about 2 things. The first one is, Jenny, I'm gonna come back to you and talk about this idea of how the heck did you get 300 people in there? Okay. But you talk about a motivated seller, and there's the real estate professional, the listing agent, if you will, is a little bit hamstrung in this process, aren't they?
They are.
And they're hamstrung because everybody says they're motivated, okay? Yeah. And then you're able to ferret out the folks who really are motivated because of the process, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And you also always have to be willing to walk out the door. And that's what many real estate agents are, because their model is different, are not willing to do. And also sometimes they just don't listen to the listing agent. We've had that many times. Hearing it from a third party sometimes is much easier, someone that has nothing vested, nothing to gain by not just telling them the truth. Because if you're not on the same path at the very beginning, auction day will be no fun for anybody. So we pride ourselves and we don't move forward with a lot of people because of that, but we support the agent and their knowledge of the market and what needs to be done. And if they don't listen to the agent, then we simply will not move forward. If it's things that they should do, staging the property, taking care of it, painting, whatever.
So I promise you, we'll get to that part because those are other more challenging things for the real estate agents, the listing agents to get to. But when it comes down to kind of the blueprint, if you will, of why you think this process actually does ferret out the motivated folks, why do you think that is? And then how do you kind of prove that out? Like what are the proof points that you use to say, yes, this guy's motivated or this woman is not?
Well, the range of value is a big piece. So if the higher the property in price, the further away from reality the real number is. And when you get over about 8 million, 7, 8 million, the gap starts getting larger. And so we err on the more conservative side than what even the realtor will, because we want to underpromise and overdeliver. That's one of the keys of our business, which is very unusual in our industry. Most of it is tell them what they want to hear and then beat them down when you get down close to the auction. which is no fun for the agent or the seller. So we feel it's just better to be on the same page at the very beginning. And then you have a conversation with the seller. You know, why are you selling? What's the reason? I just saw a property in North Dallas on the market for, you know, just under $10 million. It's 15,000 square feet, and there's two people that live there, and they're in their early 70s. Well, that's a good reason to be moving. It's a lot to take care of, and the lady is the one that takes, you know, has to organize that. So asking those questions, why are they selling? Is this a, you know, I've had this week, last couple of weeks, it seems like everyone has four or five homes. So these homes are very expensive to carry, normally $250,000 to $350,000 a year. To wait for the traditional model to sell it. So when you're looking at those kind of carrying costs and money lost in your money, and it's easy to figure for people, you know, $4 million invested 5%, $200,000 a year, that's not coming back. So I think when you have those conversations and you do it enough, and I had the same conversations in the art world, you know, which is very subjective, because basically, if it's a painting, it's paint on canvas, you know. So what is
even,
it?
Yeah, I mean, even more subjective by far, right?
Much more. So it started in that world, and we just turned down a bunch of people. Our original people we started with were my art clients, because they understood the auction process mm-hmm. and knew that we were going to tell them the truth. Sometimes they don't like it, and that's right. Okay. It's their home. But the agents do appreciate us being honest with their clients, and they tell them in advance, if they've worked with us before, that your property may not qualify for their program. They do not take on that many properties.
Yeah. So we'll get to that part, that whole idea of what you're looking for. But you know, I think the biggest mystery in all of it, as you know, you and I have known each other for many years. I talk to agents all the time. The biggest mystery in it is, how do you get that information? Okay. And how come they're giving the information to you and they're not giving it to the listing agent? What's the difference?
The difference is if they at the conclusion of our conversation, which is with the seller, the initial conversation, I would say 95% of the time, they're asking the same question of myself, or if Jenny is talking to them, exactly the same. Is this a property that your company is interested in selling? I would say rarely does a traditional realtor get that question asked of them. Most of the time, the realtors are trying to differentiate themselves between the other five brokers.
The whole parade through the listing. Presentation. So that's interesting. Now, Jenny, you're the marketing expert here, right? In your mind, what's happening in that seller's sort of psyche as that question comes up, or it doesn't come up before? Why is that coming up with you?
I believe it's coming up with us, Diane, purely and simply because in most cases, the properties have already been on the market traditionally. During that time, while the luxury agent that's representing them may be doing everything in their capability to be able to market the home, they're still restricted, if I can use the word restricted, sure, to what their MLS, what their syndication sites have available to them, and the information that's shared out there. There's no uniqueness in the messaging, and it's no fault of their own. Again, it's the system of what they have to work with. I believe that when a seller has sat traditionally, whether it be 3 months, 6 months, a year, and excuse me, we're seeing upwards of, I just spoke to a seller that was on the market 1,253 days. Now that to me is not selling a home. That is pain. And I think for the sellers to look at our program through our marketing process is have most cases felt the pain, sadly, of having their homes listed traditionally and not seen any results. And again, it's not through the lack of effort from the real estate agent. It's from the messaging. We have a marketing message, as Maverick shared with you before, that drives buyers to take action by defining when that property will sell. So instead of just putting out the for sale message and letting the buyers participate, for the seller, the seller is now able to set the terms. The seller is able to say, okay, if we have one buyer, five buyers, 10 buyers out there that want my home, they're going to have to compete, or they're going to have to act by a given time frame on a given date at a specific time. And that is what is making those buyers take action, so the sellers can see more in an accelerated time frame of who truly is interested in their home and seeing the results, because we're condensing marketing with that message to drive buyers to take action that the sellers can see exponential results from.
And so, Jen, you look at that, and that's really how you're driving the folks, right? You have sensational marketing. I mean, your team is an Institute Marketing Award winner. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the materials are unbelievable, first and foremost, right? Like, but in some ways now that's table stakes. And so the materials are great. You're targeting, you're using all of the technology available to you. You've built up this, by now, I'm sure, an enormous list of targets, using all kinds of different lists and things like that. And then, you know, fast forward, and we're going to go back to Lisa's, 300 people are coming through a gated community because there's, you've increased demand for something, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so then what? What's the next thing that happens in this now completely accelerated time frame?
And you're exactly right. It does increase that demand. So they're seeing the messaging. They're seeing that this property is available. Before, they couldn't get potentially behind the gates unless they were represented by an agent that could get them behind the gates, or they had to call the listing agent. Now, all of a sudden, they have access at given times to be able to set appointments to come and view that property. But once they get in the property, now all of a sudden they are seeing other people walking through that home at the same time as
by them. Design, right? By design,
exactly by design. And we kind of work that to our advantage. I won't be shy about saying that.
No.
When potentially a buyer is walking through the property with or without their representing agent, if they have one, it's normally exclusively theirs for that period, 45 minutes, hour, whatever that period of time is that they're previewing the property, it's all theirs. Well, when you put people in a home together, suddenly they already are seeing competition. So if they're falling in love with the home, they're having that fishing reel, if you will, pulling on the hook with them, because they're seeing Mr. and Mrs. over here. They're seeing a person over here, another one over here in the house. And they are feeling all the senses. They're being touched, look, touch, smell, mm-hmm. envisioning themselves in a home. And suddenly now they're realizing that, oh my gosh, well, what if that person wants it better than I? Maybe I should act now, sooner rather than later. So that's what, number one, will drive people into the property, and number two, will start that competitiveness between the buyers. Should I make an offer before the auction, or should I wait on auction day? What's better for me? And they weigh the odds, which way they want to go and how badly they need the property.
Yeah, and this is a want environment for these, most of these people that you've mm-hmm. subtly switched to a need, right?
It's very much so.
It's very interesting. And of course, every time I'm around you both, I sort of flash back to all of the TV shows and movies that have the auctioneer and the person pulling on their ear and putting up a sign. And it's a mystery. And it's a really cool profession that's very, very layered. And unfortunately, in the industry that we're in now, there's some roadblocks to this mm-hmm. process that you have to overcome. And I think the first one is this idea that people see this no reserve. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear. That's also intentional, right?
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah. So talk about the intentionality of that, Jenny, and why that's actually something that's should not be feared.
Well, from the seller's perspective, I'll take it from that side first. From the seller's perspective, selling the property with a no reserve, they understand that they're going to attract the most amount of buyers to participate, and they're not negotiating against the seller. All of a sudden, the buyers are competing against each other to hopefully being that winning and highest bidder, knowing that the property doesn't have a reserve, meaning it doesn't have a minimum bid that needs to be met before the property sold. So it motivates the buyers to bring their highest and best offers either before the auction or competing and bidding during the auction process on auction day. So for the seller, no longer is he or she having to haggle, it's the buyers that are competing against each other. And for the buyers, knowing that property has no reserve set on it, they know that the seller is truly motivated to sell. So whatever their highest and best is come auction day will ultimately result in what the fair market value is at that property. And they know that they're competing against like-minded individuals that all see the value in their minds on that property.
But it feels like to me that the reason why I asked that question and the reason why I think anyone listening has that question is that puts a lot of pressure on you, right? Also, because the natural inclination for people to think is, oh my gosh, my $4 million house isn't going to sell for $4 million or 3.8 to 4.2 or 3.5 to 4.3, as you said, it's going to sell for two because there's no reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, that sometimes is what the initial thought of people that they think. I just had a conversation with the seller a couple of days ago and gave him a couple. We always give the seller options, reserve, or what we call subject to seller confirmation auctions, where the seller has a right to accept or reject the high bid, or no reserve. Here's the benefits of both. And they almost certainly go to the no reserve side. The $10 million guy that I mentioned earlier, obviously it's $10 million is not the number, but we gave them a range of value. And I said at this level, because it's so much to take care of and not inexpensive to do that either, more than likely it's going to be a pre-auction sale. When you get over $5, $6, $7 million, then there's only normally a couple of people. Sometimes there's one person. So many times it's not an auction, live auction or a bidding platform, which we're using today in COVID situation. It is someone that's going to make an offer beforehand. But the auction drew them in. The no reserve auction got them to pick up the telephone. And that's a marketing message. And that's what it's designed to do versus it just being for sale. Right. And the net that Jenny and her team put out there, we're partners also with the Wall Street Journal. The negotiated rates that Jenny gets, most people cannot get. One of our buyers here in Texas right now saw the ad in the Wall Street Journal. So it's a big reach from that standpoint. But don't underestimate, I tell sellers, that that auction or no reserve auction message. It's an extremely powerful one, and it will get the phone to ring.
It's good. Well, so let's go back to Lisa. So now we're in the middle. We're in kind of the midpoint. You've sent hundreds of people through. And this home was about 2 million. Help me remember.
I think it was on the market for just a little under 3.
Under 3, right.
Yeah.
So that's in a suburb of Dallas. So just relatively speaking, just to give people a range of, this isn't a, you know, the one we're talking about very specifically is not this massive, you know, sprawling ranch. And I say that because this is very effective in markets when people don't always think about them being effective. Okay. So I bring up this hot, super hot suburb of Dallas, right? Yeah. But it was a unique home. And so now you've got the 300 people that Jenny's brought in, and it stays open for a successive number of weekends, right?
Normally 3 or 4 weekends, correct.
And all of these people are coming through. What's Lisa doing at this point?
Well, Lisa was very unusual in the fact that she was not only the listing agent, but her entire list or showing team were all family members.
Right,
so
that's right.
There was no hiding anything.
Right.
They knew exactly what was going on. But her father, we always tell the listing agent, don't give too many details to the seller as we're going through it, because nobody is real till we have money in our
right.
world.
Right. So that's an outlier. But what is an agent doing during the process of those 4 weekends? What is the role that the agent has?
There's a lot of prep work. They have to get the house ready, stage it, fill out a property profile sheet for all the marketing that Jenny does before we do any showings. And then mm-hmm. their job is they supply photography and a team of people to help show a property that normally 4 to 6 agents, depending on the size of the property. And this was about 10,000 square feet, so it was a large one. And so it's determined on how long it will take to tour it.
So and why is the agent motivated to do all this?
For the main reason is they want to get their property sold. At what the
and,
most
and they get paid.
And they get their full commission. So right. many, this times, is, yeah. many times they get, they can double end their commission in our world to work with us as a preferred agent also. But the big thing is their main motivation is they can get their client to have their home sold. Right. That's what the main thing.
So they're involved in the process.
Very, all the way
and
through.
And you're a resource that they're bringing in to help accelerate the sale.
That is correct. Just like a doctor, a lawyer, a wealth manager brings in specialists, and, that's exactly yeah. what they're bringing in.
And they get paid. And as the process goes on, first, I think the other key is they're learning a whole lot during this, aren't they?
That's the biggest thing that, aside from the monetary, which is substantial, I tell agents, now you get a chance to peek behind the curtain to see how luxury agents, how a luxury auction works. Mm-hmm. And they many times come on board with our firm as a preferred agent because they see the advantage of offering this. About half our properties go directly to auction. They've never been listed because our agents are giving the seller choices. But they're involved all the way through the process. They see the amount of people that come through. So at the end, when we talk to the seller, they're a big advocate that we have done exactly what we said we would do. It's not a silver bullet. It's not magic. But the 300 people will narrow down to 5 to 10 people right. that are interested in the property.
So now, go ahead, Jen.
If I may add there, one thing that Maverick hasn't shared, which I know that he would have got to a point of, is not only is the agent an intricate part of what we do because we become a partnership together for the ultimate goal to sell the seller's home for the highest price possible, but once the property is under escrow, what we do as a company is we share with the listing agent all the unrepresented buyer leads to the listing agent at no referral fee, so they can then go ahead and sell those buyers another property. Obviously, there can only be one winner at auction with over 300 people coming through the home, and as Maverick said, only 50% potentially being represented by agents. They are in receipt of that list of buyers, and they can go work some other deals where they can increase their opportunities to earn more commissions on future sales.
That's excellent, Jen. And I want to amplify that even further because I know that when we've talked about this, it's still the place that I kind of shake my head. So we have a potential $3 million home that's actively being professionally marketed. And about half of the people that come that are interested in it have no representation whatsoever. I mean, I have to repeat that mm-hmm. because I think that in the world of real estate, that's the single most shocking thing in the whole process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so part of it is you're dealing in an environment of people with wants and not needs. Their needs are all met. Then that Maslow's hierarchy of needs, they're all set, right? This could be their right. third or fourth or fifth home. But right. you've to use your words, you've brought these people out of the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're coming to this transaction unrepresented. So to Maverick's earlier point, it's like a triple bonus day for an agent because mm-hmm. as a listing agent, you are getting compensated. But this idea that there's the potential that happens half the time that you're going to double end the property because there is no, the potential buyer didn't come represented. And then there's this idea of a stack of people who are now out of the shadows and they belong to the agent mm-hmm. now, the local agent who has now unearthed that. And so again, if we're trying to demystify a process, to me, that's the piece that is probably the single most important for the real estate agent industry to understand. You're not competing. You're a specialized team of people that have access to a large network of people who have wants and not needs. Mm-hmm. And the agent benefits tremendously.
And on top of that, Diane, we don't ask for any referral fees back from any of that. So if they go and sell any of those unrepresented buyers another property, it's all for them. We don't expect anything. We're happy to do so.
That's great. That's really terrific. And so now here we are. We've got hundreds of people. We're on the last weekend. We're in the window of time when people can now start bidding on this. Can you talk about that?
Sure. The everything happens the last 4 to 7 days, and we're living that right now on this property in North Dallas. So the what we're looking at is we're narrowing down to auction day. Where is the most money for the seller? Is it auction day or is it before the auction? So again, there's a vehicle they can place opening bids, they can buy the property before the auction. So we're looking at what's better for the seller. And Lisa's case, we felt it was better to create a bid war with multiple people prior to the auction, because sometimes the people that are involved beforehand do not want to be involved in the auction. So you're going to lose them. So there's an advantage to that. And the marketing's got to reach out to the buyer first, agent second. We're not ignoring the agents, but we can't rely on real estate agents to sell our properties. We've got to be able to connect to the consumer. And that's what I think we have an unfair advantage to the typical realtor, because we have a bigger reach, we have a bigger marketing budget, and we have a better message that drives that buyer to take action. It's the real estate agents. We have many sellers that reach out to us directly that before they even list the property or it's expired and it didn't sell. And then we still don't list properties traditionally, even though Jenny's a broker in multiple states. We normally reach out through our network to see who's the preferred agent with our firm in that area. If there isn't one in that area, then we do research and contact our other agents to see who would be the best one to list a property in that area. So that's another way that the agents can make money working with us, is to be a preferred agent in an area, because so many sellers are more and more reaching out to us directly.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about that. I think again, kind of in this idea of demystifying, Mav, that on that those last 4 to 7 days, what's happening? And when does it end? What does look like?
Yep, the end is this is how it worked in Lisa's case. Everybody has to put up hard money to bid. So in Lisa's case, it was they had to wire $100,000 into a title escrow account that the seller and the listing agent choose, not the buyer.
Not a little bit of money.
Say again?
Not a little bit of money. Not a lot of money, right?
No. Between 100 and 250, yep. But mm-hmm. Hers was 100. And then, and that goes exact, even if they want to make an offer. And here's where we talked about earlier, where the seller has control. This is the big difference in a pre-auction offer situation that happened in Lisa's case. Before we even present an offer, they have to wire their money in. All of our properties are sold with no contingency, so we don't have fallouts for the most part. And when they've wired their money and we have their offer in, and say we have multiple offers and we're moving the people up the ladder, and some guy gets to his top offer, he can't move anymore. Well, in the traditional world, buyer makes offer, the seller counters, buyer's offer is released. In my world, in our world, in the luxury auction world, there is no release until we tell them to release it. So we still have that person's money, and that offer is real at their number. Versus if we say there's another higher bid, might be the fact they have they need 30 days to close, and the other person can close tomorrow. So the seller sometimes will go with the little less offer because they know it can close quicker. There's different scenarios, but what we're looking at is where's the most money? And then if we're in a pre-auction offer situation, then we're vying the buyers against each other, and then we get to the top. And most of the time we are within our range of value, and the seller is obligated to sell in that range. And then we go back to the seller, here's our high bid, we're finished. And then the seller signs a purchase contract, and the buyer puts in 10% of their bid the next day, minus the 100 in that example, and then close in 30 days with no contingencies. So these are all non-contingent sales, which is extremely clean for the seller. Most of the deals that fall apart in the traditional real estate world fall apart in that inspection period. We do all of that ahead of time before auction day, or even before they make an offer. So
tell me about that a little bit, because that's super fascinating, again, in this process. So you all, in your 4 to 6 week period, you've done an inspection to find anything that is would in the traditional world sort of stop or kill the deal, right?
Yes.
And if I may, Maverick, I go and highlight this, please? Is that okay?
Please go ahead, Jenny. I was just going to say that.
Okay, super. So yes, Diane, once the seller has committed to moving forward and we have an agreement between the listing agent, the seller, and the auction company, the first thing we do is we share duties, if you will. As part of that comes to what Maverick just referred to as the due diligence packet. And I think that's why it comes back to Diane, why 50% of the buyers are unrepresented, because they have so much information moving forward and feel comfortable moving forward because they have that packet of due diligence information. So to explain what's in that packet, to Maverick's point, we have a seller property disclosure. We have a home inspection. As part of that home inspection, what goes with it? The termite inspection, the pool inspection, depending on the state. Do we need a survey? If there's a well on the property, we have the well inspected. All the traditional documents that would normally go through that contingent 10-day inspection period once the purchase contract has been signed, we provide to the buyers prior to them making their decision whether or not they want to participate and bid in the auction, which makes them feel extremely comfortable moving forward with our process. And so many people say, this is so transparent. I had a conversation with an agent just myself yesterday who said, you're very transparent. You're giving me all the information. I don't have to ask any questions. You're providing all the documentation. So when I know I'm representing a buyer moving into a where is as is sell at auction, I have no questions because you've made that packet of due diligence information available to me and my buyer, so we can do our due process and know that if we're moving forward, there's not a 10-foot gaping hole in the ceiling, or maybe there is, and we, you know, just take an amount off of our bid to know what it's going to take to repair that hole in the ceiling, for you know, as an example.
So Jen, but who gets the due diligence packet? At what stage? Is it after I've given my $100,000? Or
great question. No, the process is, Diane, is once a buyer has typically viewed the property with or without their representing agent, if they have one, and they've expressed an interest to move forward, we share with them that there is a due diligence packet of information available to them. It's not free, but it's not the cost of an inspection, which typically on these large homes can be upwards of $800, $1,500, depending on the size of the home. So we do charge the buyers $100, nominal fee that they can pay to receive the due diligence packet. In there also is a preliminary title report, so they can see if there's any liens on the property. Is there any debt on the property? Is the property going to be able to be sold free and clear of all liens, which all the properties that we represent are. Now, some sellers have obviously some nominal mortgage still left on the property that will be paid off upon the purchase. So that to that point, once the buyer has seen the home, they've expressed an interest to buy, then we offer them the opportunity to obtain the buyer due diligence packet. They review all of that. And also in that packet of information are the terms of the auction, any buyer bidder documentation, the bidder registration, and they get to preview the prepared purchase contract as well. So there's no surprises on them. Once they are declared the winning and highest bidder, they know exactly the document they're going to be signing.
It's really interesting as I, as you know, we get deeper into this process, you know, a lot of people, to meet my point earlier, right, I think of the art and antiquities auction where I'm tugging at my ear, I'm doing this, and there's no, we don't see what all went into that, nor do we, is this anything like the courthouse steps, right, mm-hmm. where people mm-hmm. also think about real estate auctions, right? It's literally, you've taken all of that and turned it on its head, mm-hmm. okay? And mm-hmm. said, what is really the most accelerated way to get this property sold? Transparency, mm-hmm. right?
First and foremost.
And boy, the second thing in the word that I'm going to use from now on is you just qualify the heck out of people, right? There's no looky-loos.
Exactly.
The even $100, which to most of these people is like a buck and a half, but it doesn't matter. It's still $100 and there's still a professional price to play here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's terrific. And just for me, and you know me well enough to know, I'm going to ask you to do this, Jen, that at the end of, do you ever go to the live auction where you have the gavel in your hand and you auction it live? How often does that happen?
I knew you would go without saying that. Pre-COVID, absolutely. Yes, Diane. Yeah. Pre-COVID, okay. In the room, buyers in the room. And there's no better way for buyers to understand the bidding process than to be able to look at their competitors in a room. Mm-hmm. Yes. It does come down to that live auction, and you'll see the whole team there represent a team of representatives from not only the auction company, but again, the listing agent and their showing team. Mm-hmm. They're all there. It's not a public auction pre-COVID, I'm talking now. Sure. You know, not everywhere. We don't want 50 or 100 people coming in and, to your point, looky-loos, nosy neighbors, right? You always are going to get them. Mm-hmm. It is a very private affair. So only those that are registered to bid and their representing agents can attend the auction, because we don't want any spotlights being put on any of the buyers or creating any kind of feeling uncomfortable. We want,
because they're now out of the shadows. I love that. And I want to keep coming back to that. So Jenny, can you do it for me for just 10 seconds?
What do we say? Here we go. At $2 million, opening bid at $2 million, now $2.5 million. At $2.5 million, now $2.5 million, now $2,750. Yes, $2,750, now $3 million. Do I see $3 million in the room? There you go.
I love that. I'm sorry. That was so selfish of me, but I can't help it. I just love it. And it does. It really, you can feel it, right? You can, and I know that you both are professional auctioneers, and Jenny, you do a lot of work in charitable organizations and, yes. And one day I will come and see that live and have you do that. So you can see how the energy picks up. And so at this point, you talked a little bit about the agents and how they find you and how do you go through that process of preferred and all of that. So mm-hmm. Jen, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, because of the process of what we do, to your point, not a lot of people know about the process. Maverick will tell you every day of the week, he's educating agents on the process and letting them know that this is a great resource for them to use with obtaining new clients or with the existing clients that they already have. To that point, we have developed a certification course where we are now being able to offer to any luxury professionals who want to get a well-established background and a knowledge base of how the luxury auction process works. We now have that certification course available to them. So we share with them the history of auctions, the types of auctions, why they as a luxury agent should have this in their arsenal, in their toolbox, if you will. So when a seller who now auctions are more prevalent, a lot more than they were 5 years ago, sure. and definitely more than they were 10 years ago. So for the agent to have a background knowledge of the auction process, what it entails, enough information so when a seller asks them, so Mr. or Mrs. Agent, you know, I've heard about these auctions, what do you know about them, and is this a good opportunity for me to be able to sell my home through an auction? We're providing them with the information that they can have that initial conversation so they can feel comfortable doing that.
The other thing, don't you think, not to lead the witness here, but don't you think that if I'm selling my home and I ask the question of an agent, how are you going to market the home? This should be in the arsenal, right? That
absolutely every day of the week. And now to Maverick's comment earlier here in our podcast, is that when you're going up against potentially two, three, or four other agents to win that listing, how are you going to differentiate yourself from those? How is your marketing process, or how is your bucket of options available to your seller, if you will? What options can you bring to the table for that seller that maybe the other agents can't offer? What other opportunities do you have? So that sets you more on a higher pedestal to have that seller select you, because you're bringing more opportunities to your client.
And so once I'm certified, then I at that point, what happens?
For our certified auction agents, they will receive a seal. We have a wonderful designation seal that they will have from us, and they can use within their marketing materials. They can use within information we'll give them for their presentations. They can incorporate it into their listing presentations when they're going to the seller to speak with them about their homes. And then from there further, when they bring a property to auction with us, they have an opportunity to go from a certified agent to a preferred luxury agent, which establishes them as a preferred luxury agent of choice in their area, in their given city, for our auction process. So 50% of the time, I think it's equaling 50% of the time now, sellers will call our company directly with not having any representation. And we do want to and do partner with luxury agents for all the properties that we sell. So if they're not represented, we'll look to one of our preferred luxury agents to partner with in their area so that we can work with them and be able to designate them to work with that seller for us. So there's two categories. Once they've become certified, they then bring an opportunity to work with us through an auction platform. Once we've conducted an auction with them, then they are able and have the opportunity to come on board with the company as a preferred luxury agent, and they're featured on the website.
Wow, Jenny, that's a lot of great information. So what are the benefits of going to that next level and being a preferred luxury agent with you?
So as a preferred luxury agent, they have an agents have an opportunity to receive referrals in two different ways. One, when they work with us and bring us a property, they have a potential opportunity to double their commission, as Supreme Auctions are going to pay them a referral fee for working with us. The second opportunity is when they bring another agent's listing to us. So maybe a colleague in their office has a listing and they refer them to Supreme Auctions, we're going to pay them a referral fee for that too. So both of those opportunities available when those agents become a preferred luxury agent with Supreme Auctions.
That's outstanding. And they find all this information on your website?
We are actually, I'm quite excited, having a brand new launch of a new website. And they will have all that information available to them there.
Excellent.
But in the meantime, they can reach out to Maverick or myself.
Excellent. That's great. Okay. Well, look, this was incredibly informative, and I like it because I learn a whole bunch every time I get the honor of spending time with you both. You're two of my favorite people. And so I thank you both very much. And I thank you for the long partnership we've had with you at the Institute. And so thanks, Jenny and Maverick from Supreme Auctions.
Well, no, thank you very much for having us on today. And we look forward to many more partnerships and working with the members of the Institute. Thank you.
And we appreciate, Diane, your friendship and your support over the years. It is most appreciated. And we love working with the Institute and their members. And so thank you for taking the time today and inviting us on this podcast.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
I know.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of A State of Mind, The Art of Selling Luxury Real Estate. If you're interested in learning more about the Institute, you can find more at luxuryhomemarketing.com. If you like what you just heard, please share with a friend, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thanks for listening.